Off the ball. Rugby.
Quaid Cooper, Matt Giteau, David Pocock, and those are guys that not only got to learn a lot from, but when I would look across and see them in the change rooms with me, I felt we were always a chance of doing well.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Off the ball breakfast.
With UPMC Sports Surgery Clinic. When things don't move, rotate or bend like they used to, choose us to help you get back in action.
Yeah, Susanna Mullen, good morning to you.
Good morning, how are you, Ger?
Hi, Hannah, how are you?
Morning, guys, how are we?
Susanna, that couldn't have gone any better, really. Like, everybody beaming afterwards.
Oh, stop. It was incredible. I mean, performance on the pitch aside, I think if you've been a woman or a girl involved in rugby in the last 5-10 years in Ireland, to be in that stadium with the amount of people cheering them on and then for them to put on that performance on the pitch, it was honestly quite emotional. And I think all the media, all the journalists, but also all the girls and the coaches, they were just absolutely delighted. It was really incredible scenes afterwards.
Talk to us a bit about the build-up then, because obviously from the captain's run and then the quality of the performance and for it to go as well as it did, when did you sense that everything was locked in?
You know, honestly, it was a little bit hairy at the start of the second half. I mean, obviously, Ireland dominated a lot of the first half, especially that opening 20 minutes. They looked slick. They said they wanted to come out fast, and they did that. They put the nail down. But then Japan did start to come back. They came out of the second half firing. They scored the first try, and they looked like they were about to score another one, which would have made it, I think, 28-21. And that would have been squeaky bum time. But Eve Higgins came out with that absolutely phenomenal piece of individual skill. She read the line beautifully, shot up out, intercepted the ball, and was away. I think it was like an 80 or 85 meter sprint down the pitch. And it was funny, like, you always think the wingers, Amy Lee Costigan and Babyn Parsons, have the speed, but Amy Lee was running next to her, and I'm sure she pulled up a little bit, but she couldn't catch Eve Higgins, and she was gone, and she was under the posts. And I think that was the moment when we saw it switch, and Japan, I think, maybe lost a bit of confidence there, and then they weren't coming back from that.
Hannah, in many ways, this victory, like he says, we just heard that clip from Scott Beaman, we'll take Spain seriously, but the Japan game, if there was going to be a letdown, if there was going to be something that had gone wrong, some psychologically not tuned in properly, it's more than likely going to happen in the first game. Now everybody is into it. They're going to find their flow and they can relax and begin to show us exactly who they are.
Yeah, and as you said, like the Japan game was the one that could have been the potential banana skin just by form on paper. And we've obviously played Japan over the last couple of years. Strangely enough, they played Spain twice in their warm-up games pre this World Cup, which is unusual that you play someone in the same group, and Japan beat Spain twice. But yeah, Japan were the ones, and obviously Ireland would have known that Japan were eyeing up this one as their must-win game if they were to have any hope of progressing out of the group. So yeah, you take all that into it. You take the pre-match, pre-tournament nerves into it, kind of waiting till Sunday to get your campaign started. All of that considered, the home crowd, all of that's kind of supercharged for them, and that feeling of the home crowd, rather. Yeah, it's great to get off the mark and for it to be a tidy win.
Is there anything that you saw that was slightly different afterwards? Beaman was talking about the line-out and they're trying to put some new things in there. I guess you want to make sure that you stress test them under match conditions, but not fully show New Zealand or France what you're capable of?
Yeah, from my point of view, the line-out was really, really impressive. Started off really slick. What the most pleasing part of it, I think, obviously, I think 5 of our tries out of the 6 were from set-piece launchers, and line-out playing a big part in that. But the line-out was really slick in terms of the variety. When you play against the big teams that'll kind of bruise you up front in a maul, you can't just rely solely on the maul. So we saw Ireland revert to... We had a lovely one-woman lift on Ruth Campbell at one stage for a line-out that totally caught Japan on the hop. You saw some nice transfers in the air. You saw a bit of mauling. You saw a bit of peeling. It's just having that variety, as you said, not to show your full hand, but to show enough variety that you keep teams guessing that you're not doing X, Y, and Z in a certain part of the pitch. There was a little bit of a hiccup in it as it kind of went through the first half, but from a frustrating point of view, looking at it, you know, obviously Niamh Jones obviously gets the brunt of the, to the untrained eye, she gets the brunt of the kind of the blame on a lot of those. But I think it was something tiny from me looking at it on a camera angle, that the girls just were leaving too big of a gap almost between them and Japan past that meter. So the gap is always exaggerated, thus making it harder to jump straight and for the ball to travel in a straight line. So I think they'll see that, they'll know that themselves, and it'll be a quick fix. But everything else around it was really, really, really pleasing.
Suzanne, a slightly weird narrative coming from New Zealand about how we're going to throw the game against them in preparation for the France game. Did that cross over into your conversations in the press box? Did it cross over into conversations with the Ireland management team? And where the hell is this coming from?
Yeah, so this is really bizarre. It's definitely been the hot topic amongst the journalists and the press box. But so basically, on Friday night on the BBC live coverage, Ruby Tui, who's a former, well, she still plays for New Zealand, but she wasn't selected for this World Cup, and she's now doing some of the coverage and the punditry. She basically said that she had on a live BBC show that somebody from the Ireland camp phoned in and said that they were going to throw the New Zealand game because they were going to focus on the two games and then focus on the quarterfinal after that. And basically the BBC presenter was a bit like, so you're saying they're going to throw the towel in? And Ruby Tui went, yeah, that's what I've heard, but basically I don't buy it. I think it's a double bluff. And so everyone was kind of going, where has she heard this? Who in the Ireland camp could have said it? So one of the journalists yesterday did ask Scott about this, and he said he hadn't heard this, that nobody in the Ireland camp would have said that. And he was a bit like, ah, we'll shake it off. That's not true. We're going to take every game seriously. But it's interesting. We were talking and somebody, an ex-player that's doing some of the punditry, she said, you know, that could have been me who said that. I could have just like kind of said it as a whim, not really taking it seriously. And Ruby Tui has taken this kind of a little bit out of the blue and decided to say it on live TV. So it's a bit of a strange situation.
Hannah, is there any world in which you do rest your best players for the game against New Zealand and go all guns blazing for France? Or, like, what is actually the right thing to do here?
Like, this is the thing. There's, like, I think it's an element of, can you say in a polite way, stirring the pot probably from Ruby Tui having a great time of meddling from the outside. But, yeah, there's definitely, there won't be a case of throwing it as such. I think... And the Irish camp won't talk about New Zealand until Spain is dealt with. And Spain, to be fair to them, as much as they got a good beating yesterday against New Zealand, they put in a hell of a fight. So that's, you know, a different conversation altogether. But from the New Zealand aspect, I think the height of what you'll see is maybe a bit of rotation. But there's so much to happen between that. You've got a whole 2 weeks of training to go with another test match thrown in against Spain. You see how the bodies hold up. If someone in a pivotal position is carrying a niggle, then you may have a little bit of rotation to get people starting minutes. But you're going out there with your best 32. So it's, and we've seen from Ireland's bench that there is great strength on the bench when they come on, and people arguably toss up for who starts and who finishes, etc. So I would like to think that he wouldn't completely rotate it around from a consistency and cohesion point of view. But that remains to be seen. Obviously, we've got this match to get through this week and see how people hold up after that.
And what people want to know is, if Ireland beat New Zealand, how does that change? And how significant is that?
Yeah, it's brilliant if we do again. Like, as I said, it's a great stat to look at. We've played New Zealand three times in our history and beaten them twice, which is a nice little stat. So you'd like to make that one more. But yeah, it's huge. So obviously the permutations are that, like, you'd imagine now France having beaten Italy in that fairly dour affair between the two of them, that they'll finish top of that group and kind of get past South Africa and Brazil in their group, and they'll win their group. So we beat New Zealand. All of a sudden we played the runners-up of that group, which would be in Italy, who looked as equally as lackluster as France did. But it's not a fear factor either way, because it's a familiar foe, whoever we would play, hopefully get to that quarterfinal. So whether it be in Italy, who we've beaten many times out, or France, who we've run close in this Six Nations. And France, by the looks of them, are on a bit of a downward trajectory, such as their kind of form and how they've come into this competition with only their one warm-up match against England. And they looked to need a lot of shaking off to be able to find some kind of form based on Saturday night's performance against Italy. So there's no fear factor for Ireland whatsoever in whoever they were to meet in the quarterfinal.
I also think if we face Italy or South Africa in that quarterfinal and we come through that, then we're likely to face Canada in a semi and we avoid the England route, which, I mean, if you can avoid England for as long as possible, that's probably key in this tournament.
So I have to ask the obvious question, then why not go all out to beat New Zealand?
Yeah, I think they will, but I mean, I don't know, Hannah, what do you think?
Yeah, I just don't think, like, it's not like... Rugby is not a game like soccer where you can just sit back and it's like, we'll go with defensive mode here. You know, there is nothing. You're getting to put on your jersey to represent your country in a World Cup. If there's a little bit of rotation, some of these girls are getting their chance to put a hand up for a selection for a quarterfinal. So there's very much everything on the line, despite it being maybe not a must-win game as such. Yeah. There's still very much a lot of kind of subplots to play for. So there's definitely, and especially in a game of rugby, a test match at a World Cup, which we waited 8 years to get back for, there would be no taking the foot off the gas and letting them have it easy, that's for sure.
But Hannah, when you say rotation, are you saying players who are the best players, some of the best players will be rested?
Not necessarily, that's what I'm saying. It depends on how we get through the Spain match first. If then people pick up niggles, obviously it's kind of been talked about, we haven't got a wealth of depth in the props. You know, we've bulked up the centres with the addition of Nancy McGillivray in there, and the back three we've pretty healthy too. So there is certain positions that, and like say for example 10, if Dana was to pick up a knock, would you see some rotation there perhaps? I'm saying that we see how we get through Spain. I would like to think from a cohesion and consistency point of view, everybody wants to play.
Yeah.
You want to play consistently. That's just the way it feels when you're in there. You want to go back to back with games. You don't want to rest, especially not in a World Cup. So everybody will be wanting to play. You can bet your life on that one, especially with the huge crowd that's going to be over there from an Irish perspective. I think the whole country is leaving to go over for that one in Brighton. So there won't be a case of anybody not wanting to play that one to mind themselves for a quarterfinal. So it'll be interesting to see how after the week of Spain, how bodies hold up and what decision the management decide to go for.
Would you play for Wafer in that game?
Maybe put her on the bench. Like Aoife's been so unlucky with injuries and her injury profile of coming back. She does unbelievable rehab to get herself back from one injury, and then she could get the most bizarre injury in the next kind of run up. So I think they will be wanting to mind her, but there's that element of match minutes. I've seen Aoife Wafer come back and play like absolute god, having not had any match minutes under her belt. So there's that argument too. So I'd say they probably won't risk her, to be honest. But again, could be proven wrong.
Yeah. Susanna, what's the schedule like this week then? Obviously, relatively, I don't know, do they go and the players who weren't playing have some hardcore training sessions, but the rest of the week is kind of tapering down and back up again for next weekend?
To be honest, I think they take a bit of a rest now today, but they're back in training, I think, pretty quickly during the week. I'm not 100% sure, but they definitely have training on Wednesday because I know the journalists are invited along to kind of watch a bit of that, and then they're going to do a press conference, and then they'll train Thursday, I'd say, captain's run Saturday, and then back in Sunday. So I don't think they'll be taking too much time off, to be honest. They'll want to be getting back in quickly, fixing any wrongs from Japan and getting up to speed for Spain, because as Scott Beaman said, they're definitely not taking this lightly. They know Spain have some threats and they don't want to risk anything going wrong in this game.
That's difficult enough to pitch that, Hannah, isn't it? Because everybody, here we are talking about New Zealand, and here we are talking about potential quarterfinal opponents, and they've got a game against the Spanish side who, you know, if they're watching this, they're they were writing us off. Like, most people were.
I know, and that's the thing. From a player's point of view, New Zealand's question won't even come into camp. Like, it won't even be a sniff. Like, it literally would have been everything on Japan. Everything and anything on Japan. And now they'll switch their mindset. They will analyse that New Zealand game, obviously, versus Spain, and pick up a few bits from that. But it would be from a Spanish point of view solely, would maybe write a few bits in the background on New Zealand. But it's literally all eyes on Spain and kind of focus on the task at hand. That we've seen it at World Cups before, where you can have a potential banana skin when you least expect it if you take your eyes off the prize. So the girls will be very much kind of next game mentality with that one.
Would you make any changes for that Spain game?
No, I wouldn't, because that's the thing that drives you mad as a player. You don't want to have the rotation. You know, you've gone to the World Cup, which is 32. We probably saw flashes in that Canada game in the warm-up of what he was thinking in terms of picks. His pick now is set a stall out from a Japan game. The only thing I would say, he is a fan of kind of picking horses for courses. So, like, we saw Fiona Chu's been added in at six, obviously based on form, but also I think a huge part of that was based on line-out. It gave Ireland three really good line-out options there in that. So he does like to do that kind of element of picking people for certain aspects of games. But like, Spain is going to be a fast-paced game. It's going to be kind of a quick tempo game. So I think much of the same for Ireland. I'd like to see him kind of stick rather than rotate anything major.
Interesting one for me is that, and you touched, Susanna touched on earlier on, around the emotion of the first game and how it felt. I presume, hopefully the players aren't listening, the girls aren't listening, but how important is it getting to a quarterfinal or semi-final in terms of the stature of the game and sort of almost putting the RFU under a bit of pressure? Let's back these women to go again. And does it feel like getting to a semis would be hugely significant?
Do you know what? It's the beauty of it is, and it's obviously the negative part that we haven't been there since 2017 due to the kind of the decline in the women's rugby during that spell, and kind of we're on the up again. But the beauty of it is that Cliona Maloney-McDonald is the only member of that team to be have played in a World Cup before for Ireland. There's no hangover for these players in like, oh God, we've got to do better than we did back in the home World Cup in 2017. There's nothing kind of, it's a clean slate essentially for this group. We know what they're capable of and they just get to go out there and express themselves. So there's lovely that kind of unburdened part that they are still very much the underdogs because it's very still much in that kind of, as you talked about, that kind of upward trajectory. But they haven't, you know, have been at the kind of the top table here of a World Cup in so long that we talk about the Canadas, New Zealands, the France need to get their house in order, England obviously being your big dogs. So Ireland don't have to deal with that kind of burden yet. Obviously you get to the knockout stages and it's a different thing, but everything once they get to the knockout stages is a bonus for the girls and they won't be kind of expected on paper to be doing anything, which will suit them lovely. Everybody knows the Irish love a good underdog story, so it'll suit the girls down to the ground when they get to there, hopefully all going well.
All right. We are predicting a win though, right? We are going to beat Spain.
Yeah, we definitely predict a win. Yeah. There'll be a good test, you know, though, but because we saw, like, anybody who watched that New Zealand game, New Zealand only put 54, I think, points in them, which seems like nothing, but for a New Zealand team, like, they bruised New Zealand. Like, New Zealand also, you know, were able to play the last, I think, 17 minutes or so with 13 players, which was a bit of a flex for them with injuries. But Spain kept going. Like, there was serious dog in them. They weren't overawed by the fact that this was the world champion, so they will not care. As I said, every match that they have is essentially, they know they're not making it probably past the group stages at this stage with one loss under their belt, so they'll be gunning for it.
All right.
I almost feel like, sorry, if we beat Japan and Spain and then go into New Zealand and put up a good fight, Vinny, on your question, I almost feel like qualifying for the World Cup, being here where there's being record-breaking crowd attendances every day. I mean, I think there's something like three times the amount of tickets sold at the last World Cup. I almost think that does enough to spur on this green wave that the girls are always talking about, if that makes sense. I think getting to the quarterfinals and a semi, as Hannah said, is a bonus. And from a performance point of view, that's fantastic. But from an emotion point of view and getting people alongside them, I almost think Ireland are already there and everything they can add on to it now just makes it even better, if that makes sense.
Yeah, but my point is, by getting to a quarters and a semis, can you take another chunk of Irish, particularly young girls, on that journey that grows the sport again and almost forces their view to back women even more or better is probably the word I should use.
Yeah, definitely you can, because Vinny, you saw like with the Olympics, the take up in gymnastics and swimming, say for example, off the back of what Mona McSherry did across what Reese McLennigan had done. It's the same for the women's game. And as you said, like we've been crying out for it for the last probably 8 years and England have led the way in terms of professionalism and contracts. Ireland, finally, the IRFU over the last number of years have bought into that. You've seen the buy-in from them and putting the support staffs in place and looking how good the girls are doing as a result of it. You put those measures in place, the girls are still the same girls. They've just been given a better program to work off. So yeah, as you said, it's very much a case of how well they can do now off the back of that. And everything after that is a bonus. But it does make a case for, you know, keep plugging to the women's game, because look what we're capable of achieving once we get out of the group stages, etc. So
yeah, 100%.
Important.
Hannah O'Connor, Susanna Mullen, thanks a million. Cheers.
Cheers, guys. Thanks a million.
Bye.
Off the Ball Breakfast is with UPMC Orthopaedic Care. When things don't move, rotate or bend like they used to, choose us to help you get back in action. I would push my chips in for the New Zealand game, pick the full team, get the rah-rah-rah going.
Yeah. Even though you don't normally believe in momentum, go a bit of momentum, win a game, go to the next game, win that, all of a sudden you're in the semi-final. And it'll be the point I'm trying to make around. Imagine the noise around Ireland in a semi-final.
Ah,
it's huge. It's huge.
Yeah.
And look at the growth of girls' soccer, by the way. It is absolutely off the charts. I was recently driving through Tallaght on the way home to work and there was a local club, St. Mark's. I'd probably seen 150 girls in a field at 5:30, 6:00. It's fantastic, like. And it's like we've Kate McCabe walking around, known from that area. And all of that stuff has a knock-on effect. And I think this tournament for the girls is a huge opportunity to grow that sport. And yeah, it's that's why I go to Champions Room.
I think exactly. I just think that I think there will be much more hype about the team now if Aoife Wafer was playing, because she's such a superstar and so totemic and so clearly identifiable, and the other couple of injuries they've had have kind of shorn us of any confidence that we might be able to beat the All Blacks, Black Ferns. But who knows? Maybe they put in a good performance against Spain and then do New Zealand, and all of a sudden, like that's it's ball game on at that stage. Right, we'll do Cash Machine.
Off the Ball Breakfast
with UPMC Sports Surgery Clinic. When things don't move, rotate, or bend like they used to, choose us to help you get back in action.
Off the Ball Rugby.
Quade Cooper, Matt Giteau, David Pocock, and those are guys that not only got to learn a lot from, but when I would look across and see them in the change rooms with me, I felt we were always a chance of doing well.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.